Chris, hello, Vashon. Didn't have my mic on. This is Chris Austin with Dove Speaks. We are live today on a very gloomy October day, and we have Nin Gray with us. She's an advocate for the Dove Project, and her guest is Amanda Blaine. And can you tell us, Nin, what you've brought this person in here for?
I am so excited about today because we love Amanda at the Dove Project. So we were fortunate enough to have Amanda Blaine offer a four-week series, class, workshop on nonviolent communication or compassionate communication to clients of Dove. And also there were a few of us on staff that also were fortunate enough to participate in this series. And I don't know that it's always 4 weeks. I think we asked Amanda to modify it for us. And so I will let Amanda tell you about what it is that she, what even is that? And a little bit more about herself, but really excited for her to share what she does and who she is.
Sounds like it's something really needed now.
Totally.
It's such a divisive time in the country.
Yeah, we're really polarized. And this work is so powerful because it's just tools for life. And it's applicable in so many contexts and so many situations. And really, there are tools that anyone and everyone can use. So
okay.
Well, thank you both.
No pressure.
No pressure.
Yeah, that was quite a build-up.
Solve the world's problem.
I'll do my best. Take it away, Amanda.
Thank you. Well, thank you both. Thank you, Nin, and thank you, Chris, for having me here.
Sure.
It's very exciting. My first time inside the radio station on Vashon.
Ours, too.
I can't tell. I was delighted to offer the four-week series at the Dove Project, which usually I'll do a 6 week or 8 week series. So I got to really condense down into what's the essence of what I want to share. And I really enjoyed working with Dove in particular because the practice of compassionate communication or nonviolent communication is about empowerment, you know, becoming clear on kind of connecting each person to our own significance and our own mattering, and how do we actually manifest that in the world, that we matter and things we need matter, and our kind of standing up for what we need and going after it actually is an important part of what the world needs. And it was, it was really fun having both kind of clients and advocates and staff from Dove there. I'll say that people hear the word communication in the title and they think that it's about how do we talk to other people. And there's certainly aspects of that in the practice. And another way of looking at it is it's a mindfulness practice. It's just like you might have a practice in terms of noticing your breath or something like that. This is a practice in that supports communication in noticing your thoughts and your body sensations, and how can you translate that into, how does that impact what you say to yourself and to other people?
I remember feeling at the time, and you just reminded me of this, but I remember thinking, oh, it's like the yoga of communication, because that's how it resonated for me. And that mindfulness piece is, you know, what just triggered that for me now, and that memory of that. But yeah, it's like the yoga of communication.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I've had this idea of teaching a class called the yoga of relationship, like how to, you know, communicate and be in relationship in a way that's super mindful and intentional and kind of full of curiosity and exploration and emergence.
Are you sore the next day? Because that's what yoga means to me.
Yeah. I feel like brain might be a little bit tired.
A good kind of sore.
Yeah. A good sore, okay.
Exhilarated, endorphins. Yeah. Another thing, most of us grew up in, some kind of context where we were learning, whether it's a religious context or a secular, you know, a school context or something, where we're learning. People are saying all the time, be kind, or, you know, do unto others as you would have done unto you, or, be compassionate, those kinds of things. And for most of us, that sounds great, you know, like, yeah, I'm on board with that. Mm-hmm. But we don't always know, like, what does that actually mean in the moment when something happens and we just don't feel compassionate or open-hearted towards someone? And the practice of nonviolent communication is like a very simple roadmap of how do we actually do that. It's like a how-to. I say it's simple. It's not easy because our limbic system, you know, lights up. We get into fight, flight, freeze. and we want to fight back. We want to defend ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's a roadmap of like, okay, I know that right now in this moment, I might want to fight. I might want to run away, but I have a, kind of a guide to help me. Like, how can it lead me back into that, that calm place of compassion where I'm connected to my prefrontal cortex, my, you know, flexibility and resiliency and
right, logic,
that.
Reasoning, yeah. Rather than the reptilian brain.
Yeah, exactly.
So is there any issue that you find particularly hard to get people to communicate, like racism or sexism, or is there something more than others that, that kind of is really hard to people
yeah,
come to terms on?
Thanks for asking that question. It does seem like I do a lot of racial equity work as well. And my sense is that, and I just find the kind of integration of nonviolent communication practice and an awareness of like racial, you know, kind of systems of oppression and how racial domination works, and not just racial, but, you know, sexism and mm-hmm. classism and all those things is so potent, and that the two kind of need each other, that often in conversations about race, there's a lot of pain, and you know, there's just, you know, hundreds of years of unintegrated trauma and harm, and that having the kind of particular tools of nonviolent communication can be a way of moving through kind of a landmine, you know, a field of landmines, and that often in those conversations there's like a lot of blame or there can be a lot of blame and also a lot of shutdown, like when people have the sense of being blamed or the sense of not being heard, that they'll just shut down, and that having this practice can be a way, you know, kind of a thread through the wilderness. Not that it kind of solves all the problems, but sure. It gives us a how-to of like, how do we even come into this conversation together?
Well, there needs to be some kind of framework, some kind of starting place that isn't, you know, anger and rage.
Yeah, I know we're so polarized right now. And I find that this kind of way of thinking, way of being, way of practice, you keep calling it a practice. And I love that. And, you know, the practice of that mindful approach to communication could be really healing, so that we're not just jumping to how could you have possibly voted for XYZ, but more like coming from a place of openness and curiosity. Like, tell me more about why you voted for XYZ. And mm-hmm. I acknowledge that we didn't vote for the same person, you know, and just conversations that we may have with relatives or people on Facebook, or, you know, to be able to stay open, and to just, what I was telling Amanda before we were on air is that one thing I really got from participating in her workshop was feeling like I gained the ability to slow down a little bit so that in my speech, so that I'm not just reacting, mm-hmm. but there's a thoughtfulness that goes into and a curiosity. Really, it comes down to curiosity for me of, well, I wonder what this person is needing, or I'm trying to listen sort of sometimes below the surface if someone is unable to express what they need.
Yeah.
To really listen a little more deeply, and to be able to do that is such a gift, not only to yourself, but to that other person, whether or not they acknowledge it or are able to.
Well, you know, I think a lot of those conversations kind of go, you hit me, and you're wanting a counterpunch immediately rather than listen to what they said. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of that limbic system kicking in, and I'm going to protect myself by attacking you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, crazy. I think that, so that in my experience of working with, you know, many, many people bringing their kind of getting to be invited into conflicts that so many people are carrying and kind of tinker around with them. Like, well, how do we meet this? How do we care for what's emerging here? What I found is that that's what happens. One person is stimulated around something. There's some way that they're experiencing, you know, like their dignity isn't being cared for, or they're not being understood for their intention or something. And they express out of that pain, and that stimulates something for the other person. So it was kind of like, first you just had one person who was kind of out, and now you have both people are out, and, you know, yeah. Neither one can be a resource to the other, right. In whatever they're going through. And so the practice of nonviolent communication can be one person says, okay, I'm going to resource myself. And how do I do that so that now I can hear what's happening for you too and support both of us in this system that we're creating between the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that it can really shift if one person, I see this a lot in couples, if one person kind of looks at, okay, in this time where we usually take a right turn and we're both, you know, mm-hmm. kind of out of commission, I'm going to take a left turn and see what happens. And I'm going to ask a different question instead of saying, no, I didn't do that. Instead saying something like, wow, it sounds like you're feeling really hurt. I'm wondering if you really would like me to listen to what you're saying. You know, that can kind of open up a new country, like
sure.
a whole new world.
But you know, that left turn can be scary. You know, you're vulnerable. You think you're vulnerable when you do the thing that you don't always do, your mm-hmm. comfort, so to speak. You know, and like Nin was pointing out, like Facebook, you know, that technology between the two parties really emboldens them. They mm-hmm. people say things online they would never say to the person's face.
Mm-hmm.
And that just makes it even harder, I think, to come to some kind of equity and, mm-hmm. you know, not be a jerk.
And it can be really vulnerable. And I found that for myself, if I'm able to practice that vulnerability leads the way to a clarity and a sense of calm, like my nervous system will calm down. Because in conflict, your nervous system is anything but calm. When you're in that sort of fight or flight or freeze response, you're all janked up, you know, and I can feel that when my body's that way. But this practice is sort of like instantly pulls me into more rest and digest, that parasympathetic nervous system response of mm-hmm. it is vulnerable to go in that direction, to take that left turn. And I find that the more I practice it, the more I get used to it, the more comfortable I feel with it, the more habitual it is. It's a way of just shifting the gear for myself so that I'm able to just be in that state of calm, not better than or more righteous than or right, more right than, but just like neutral, you know what I mean? Gray, not black or white,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is important. We need more of that. My yoga teacher calls it the sacred gray, but we need more of that mm-hmm. gray, I think, because in that place, that's where we can meet. It's the neutral territory, the Switzerland, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's something about, there's a distinction that I experienced when I was first practicing nonviolent communication, where I think in mainstream culture, there's an idea of vulnerability as weakness. And nonviolent communication is a different paradigm where vulnerability is actually a place of strength. Like being connected to my own vulnerability, I can hold that with care, and that actually can help. That can be a place of strength rather than I have to defend myself. It's like, no, my open heart is my strength and my power here.
Well, you know, I think it's such an uphill battle in some regards because, you know, the old saying goes, no one's born a bigot, right? They get sensitized to this so early in life, and you know those are old memories and mm-hmm. old ideas, and they are got to be tough to you know work around that.
Yeah, and actually, you know, I experience nonviolent communication as a body practice. It's not a. The information about what I need and the information about what's happening in the world, the only way I have to access that is through my body.
Mm-hmm.
And so nonviolent communication has this kind of idea that our feelings, like what our body is, our emotions and our feelings are clues to us about what we're needing, about what our universal human needs are. Think not what I'm needing, like I need a Porsche or, you know, I need an ice cream sundae, more like things like, I need nourishment. I need food. I can feel my belly being, you know, asking me for food, but also something like I need connection. I need love. I need tenderness. I need kindness. Those kinds of needs that you go anywhere on the planet at any time in history. And these are things that all humans share in order to thrive. Those are the things that we need. And for a lot of people, especially people socialized as men, hearing messages like be a big boy, don't cry, big mm-hmm. boys don't cry, that actually the part of the brain that's receiving information from our body about what's happening in our body starts to go quiet. Because if you've been told from a very young age, like don't share or don't pay attention to what your feelings are, then your nervous system will respond and stop giving you that message to protect you. And so I, what I've seen in my work is that often there's kind of a longer road to walk for men. And so I have so much admiration and like tenderness seeing men show up for my classes and like really like I'm going to reclaim my heart and my feeling and that part of the body does come back on. It's like once you start paying attention, just like any mindfulness practice, you're building new neural connections and you start getting information, noticing like, hey, I'm sad or I'm touched and it's like awakening to like, wow, like suddenly I can see color. It's really beautiful here.
Interesting. Let me do a little housekeeping here. We got to thank some folks, some of our underwriters. So we'll be right back.
We can't do what we do here on Voice of Vashon without our underwriters, like DR Design Studio, your Vashon Island architectural design service specializing in personalized, helpful, and energy-efficient solutions for new homes and remodels. Serving Vashon for nearly 20 years at www.drdesignstudio.com.
This tasty morsel of VOV programming is brought to you with support from Vashon Center for the Arts. A center for the arts on Vashon Island, VCA provides quality arts experiences for all ages and creates opportunities for artists to perform and exhibit their work. Find out what's happening at VashonCenterForTheArts.org.
All right, and we're back. This is Dove Speaks, Chris Austin and Gray, and our guest, Amanda Blaine. And what's your organization again?
Oh,
listeners just joining us.
Yeah, well, I'm affiliated with several. People can check out my work on my website, which is just amandablaine.org, which is actually down at the moment because it was hacked, but it should be back up in the next couple
Russians.
Days.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I also advertise or kind of post trainings through NW Compass, Northwest Compassionate Communication. And I do also work with Duet Dynamics, which you can check out their website, which is more organizational level work. It's like, how do we embed these principles of nonviolence and compassion in large systems that like you might run a whole company on? So those are just a couple affiliations that I have.
And Amanda, when you came to Dove, we really were starting kind of at the very basic level. We didn't really know much about nonviolent communication. We had heard about it, heard the term. Some of us were more familiar with it than others. But I'm wondering if you can just give listeners a few minutes of what is it? Like, what exactly is the practice? What are the basic components of it? My understanding is it's about needs and it's about using non-blaming language. And you've described it a little more when you're talking about the body and listening to your body. But could you just tell us a little bit about it? And also, it'd be interesting to hear a little bit about the history of it. Where did this mm-hmm. come from?
Sure. Yeah. I'll start there because people often, when they come to my classes, will say the name nonviolent. I didn't think that was for me because I'm not a violent person. That term nonviolent communication. So Marshall Rosenberg is the founder of nonviolent communication. There's a book called Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Life, which I highly recommend. And he was growing up in Detroit in the time, you know, during a time of a lot of unrest during the civil rights era. And that term nonviolent is a kind of pointing to the nonviolent civil rights movement and Gandhi and Martin Luther King. So the idea of nonviolence as, truth with power. So love and, you know, kind of reaching out with love and also at the same time, the fierceness of saying, no, if you could see me right now, I've got one hand open and another hand, the kind of a stop sign. Both I'm going to have my heart open to you and I'm going to really clearly create this boundary against what you're doing that might be harmful. So you ask like, what is it exactly? And you ask any trainer and everyone will have a different answer of exactly what it is. But at its heart, there's a series of distinctions that we invite people to pay attention to. And the idea is if you pay attention to these distinctions and you kind of notice, try these building blocks together, you're more likely to have connection with yourself and other people than disconnection. when you're talking about what's happening for you and what you want and what's happening for them and what they might want. So that we already talked about, there's a distinction between needs, universal human needs, things like love, compassion, connection, exploration, and the strategies that we choose to meet those needs. So a simple explanation of that is, you know, we all have a need for food, nourishment, and my strategy might be to eat pepperoni pizza and your strategy might be to eat boiled kale, you know?
Nope.
I tagged you the wrong. Yeah. but you know, we have lots of different strategies, and our strategies might be, you know, if what I'm really needing is nourishing food and I decide to only eat M&Ms, you can see how it's a tragic strategy because it's not actually tending to the deeper need of nourishment, caring for my body, my well-being. And so that's a simple example with food, but we see the same thing where a lot of times people are needing something like, you know, all humans need connection. I mean, if you look at connections with other humans. And if you look at babies who are not touched and loved by a caregiver, they actually fail to thrive. Like physiologically, their bodies fail. Their brains don't grow. And so it's not just a kind of woo-woo or like touchy-feely need. Yeah. It's actually our bodies need it in order to be healthy. So all people need, and adults need connection too. And for a lot of people, a tragic strategy for that might be something like abusing alcohol, you know, something, or another form of addiction, you know, like, abusing video games or something like that. And it's a tragic strategy because their deeper need is like, you know, a sense of connection with life or other people. And so that distinction, when we are aware of anything I'm doing at any time, is a strategy that I'm choosing in order to attend to a need. That can be so freeing and also a bit overwhelming. I think when people first encounter that idea, a lot of grief can arise when they realize, wait a minute, I didn't need to be doing X, Y, or Z all this time. Like, I could have been choosing a different strategy that might actually have served me better. So that's one distinction, this distinction between needs and strategies. Another one is between thoughts and feelings. So often our language doesn't, and part of why the practice of nonviolent communication can be really challenging when people are beginning is that our colloquial language doesn't make the distinction between thoughts and feelings. So you might hear people say all the time something like, I feel like that's a really bad idea or something. It's like, well, that's actually a thought. it's not a feeling. A feeling might be something like, I feel my heart is beating faster when I hear you say that. Mm-hmm. And I'm worried because I don't have a lot of trust that that idea will, you know, lead to what we're wanting. It's different than I feel like that's a bad idea. So being able to be clear and coming down to what's actually the information I'm getting from my body. And then there's several layers of interpretation and just being able to acknowledge what is the information in my body and what's the interpretation I'm making. Especially in a close relationship with someone else, this can be hugely freeing to be able to acknowledge it's not that what you did is wrong. It's that when I see you do that, I start sweating or my face turns red or something. And just being able to bring it back to myself and what's happening. And so those are two, that's feelings versus thoughts. And then another distinction is between requests and demands. Our language is so filled with demands. We might not even think we're making a demand because our language seems polite. We might be using the word please, like, please do this. Well, the way we can tell if it's a demand is how do we respond if the person says no? If they say no and there's some cost that they're going to pay because we're going to make them pay, you know, then we know that it was actually a demand and not a request. A request comes from the sense of, I want to get what I need. I want to care for my needs and I want what's important to you to matter also. So I don't want you to do something for me if it means that you're somehow harming yourself. And so there a lot of the, when one thing I find helpful about the practice is just coming up with language for communicating that to someone like, hey, I'd like your help with this. If it would be really fun for you to do it with me, or if it's already on your way, or I might be actually really need, you know, I might be stretched, and I might say, you know, are you willing to do this if it's not at a huge inconvenience to you? You know, so I can change my language to reflect, like, how much do I want you to stretch to meet me, and how much am I willing to stretch to meet you? And sometimes me making a request of you is actually adding something, is helping you really meet your needs in a way that you might not have been able to if I hadn't asked you.
You know, and I think it probably goes the other way, where somebody will request something and the listener thinks it's a demand. Mm-hmm. Like, I can think of, you know, especially with a woman, and might say to her husband, boy, you know, the lawn is looking bad. And the husband might think, oh my gosh, I got to go, you know, mm-hmm. make a new lawn now. Where, no, it's just an observation and, you know, we'll fix it together or whatever. But it would be misinterpreted as get the lawn fixed now. mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, so as someone who, as a practitioner of nonviolent communication, part of my practice is constantly sensing when someone uses language like that, where they say the lawn is looking bad, I can come with a sense of curiosity, like, I wonder if she's, like, I don't know, really wanting beauty or order or support or some sense of shared, like, and becoming curious about what's going on in that person, rather than reacting like, I'm not going to, that's no way to talk to me. You know, that it's just sort of teasing out which part of it is about, oh, I want to be talked to with dignity and respect, and which part of it is what's going on in the other person, and being able to listen at the level of figuring out what are all the things that are happening here when that person is saying that. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been guilty of that myself when I was married. I would hear my wife say something and I would assume it meant this, and sometimes it didn't.
Yeah. And it's usually, I mean, I think in especially long-term relationships, something like, are you going to do the dishes tonight actually means like several novels worth of things that have been communicated over many years or not been communicated. And so it's actually, it comes up in every class I teach, I think, talking about doing the dishes. It's kind of like this little microcosm of the entire universe comes into talking about the dishes. And that it can be a thread into the whole tapestry of the relationship, and that it can be so rich exploring, like, where one person, you know, the sense of where maybe over time someone has the sense of not having been appreciated or acknowledged in the way they want, and not really having had the skills or capacity to ask for that, or even to know that themselves, that's what they're needing. So this practice can be a way of kind of building resource or capacity where there hasn't been past.
And Amanda, when we did the class with you, it was just, we were all individuals coming from our own landscapes, our own lives, and we weren't there, you know, to see you like as couples or anything like that. But you mentioned that sometimes you will work with couples. So do you do, you know, like compassionate communication coaching for couples? Like, mm-hmm. it'd be an interesting alternative to couples counseling, you know. Mm-hmm. I know you're not a therapist, but or do you mostly do group classes, or what are you, can you tell us a little bit more about your offerings?
Yeah, thanks. I kind of all of the above. I'm not a therapist, so some of the people, I have a really neat situation now where there's some communities I work in where I'm working with people who are all in community with each other, and you know, I might be working with a wife and a husband and, you know, a roommate or something like that. And so I'm getting, and sometimes I'm working with them together. So, I teach classes, and at this point, so I have a free intro to nonviolent communication coming up on Tuesday, November 7th. So for anyone who's interested at co-housing,
we're at co-housing
common room. It's, from 7 to 8:30. And you don't have to sign up in advance. You can just come. If you want to sign up in advance, you can look at nwcompass.org. And it's just a quick intro, 90 minutes, little experiential activities. And then I offer series usually prompted by an invitation. I'm not necessarily the best promoter of my work. Mm-hmm. So when someone asks me to do something, like when you approached me, and then, or I can't remember if I approached you or you approached me, but then I'll be like, great, there's people who, you know, there's interest in this, and I'll offer. So I periodically offer day-long workshops on Vashon and in Seattle. And then I have some ongoing groups that are over video or online. And then a lot of my work is one-on-one with people. So someone might approach me and say, you know, I'm noticing the same pattern come up in a relationship, like a communication pattern, or I just can't manage to have like connections with other people in the way that I'm wanting. And that's very fun for me to work with someone on that, because it's very, there's like a lot of payoff, like the, you know, I can see like big leaps for someone. And I work with couples, like people will come, hey, we're having the same conflict over and over again. And, that's also super rewarding, because people are so happy to have, you know, that's a really important relationship. And, yeah. And I work with people sometimes in person, and a lot, you know, living on an island, a lot of my, I work with people in New Zealand and Virginia and all over the world. Yeah. Does that answer?
Yeah, totally. And I, you know, it's making me think, I think what I realized in doing that work with you, even just only, it was only four sessions, but it's a lot of the work that we do as advocates with survivors of domestic violence at the Dove Project. We can't control someone else's whatever perspectives, attitudes, beliefs, you know, behaviors, communication. We can't control what other people say to us or don't say, but so it really cultivates a strong sense of self-awareness. And that's so empowering, because we can work with what we can control, which is how we communicate. And I guess I just hadn't really thought about that, because I thought, well, compassionate communication, how can it work if it's only one person who knows how to do it and the other person they're talking to doesn't know how to do it? But it almost doesn't matter, because you in effect model what it is that you're modeling how you would like to be communicated with. And it's just, like I said before, it just brings a sense of clarity, and there's so much depth to that self-awareness. So you just work with what you can control, which is yourself.
Mm-hmm. And also that practice around making requests. So if I know that I, as a practitioner, if I'm learning this practice and awareness in myself, like, okay, everything I'm doing to meet a need, and everything you're doing to meet a need. It's not that you're a jerk. That's why you're doing this. There's some need, really innocent and universal need you're trying to meet. Then I can start making requests that help us be in better connection. I can make requests of you. And each time I do that, it's kind of more information for us, or it's one, building trust. Like if I say to you, hey, I'd like to hear, you know, I want you to get what you want too. So I'd like to hear a little bit more about what's going on for you. Or like, you know, I'm feeling, I care about you. So I want to, you matter to me. So I want to hear like what it would be like for you to have what you need. And that's like very disarming for some, like, wow. And I hear that over and over, and it starts to build trust. And I see somebody, like actually acting in integrity with that. It's like, wow, this person really does care about me, and I can share more of my vulnerability. And that does really shift relationships over time.
Okay, well, let's go thank some more people that help us put this show on, and we'll be right back.
Can't do what we do without our underwriters, like Island Escrow, Vashon's only independent escrow company, providing comprehensive service for all types of real estate transactions since 1979 at 206-463-3137.
This portion of VOV programming is made possible through support provided by the Northwest School of Animal Massage. MWSAM has something for every animal lover. Workshops, professional courses, and blended learning options that allow flexibility as students learn large and small animal massage for professional certification or to take special care of our beloved pets. More information at NWSAM.com.
And we're back. This is Dove Speaks with Chris Austin and Gray and our guest Amanda Blaine. And where were we?
Well, I just wanted to thank Amanda again so much for coming on today to Dove Speaks at the Voice of Vashon Station and being a guest in person. And we at the Dove Project have so appreciated her volunteering to teach a class for our survivors and so our clients and staff. And we'd love to have her back again and again. So thank you for that. And I'm just curious, what's next for Ms. Amanda Blaine? What are you hoping to accomplish here on the island with your work and off island as well?
Yeah, thank you so much. I just want to say this has been really fun. You got me talking. I usually listen a lot, so yeah, thanks for having me. And I love so much what Dove is doing. So just to dovetail into your question about what I'm looking forward to, I love collaborating with people. So you know, I'm offering offerings on the island, and then looking at how can I work with like great organizations like Dove and initiatives that are happening on the island to support. How can I support these kind of like community strengthening initiatives? And so, yeah, if you're listening and you have a collaboration in mind, or what I've said has touched something for you, and you want to see like how could what I'm offering support what you're doing, I'd love to hear from you.
Can you give us your information again one more time, just how people can get a hold of you and mention that class again that is free to the community?
Sure. Yeah. So my website is amandablaine.org, AmandaBlaine.org. And you can email me at amanda@nwcompass.org. And a free 90-minute intro taster workshop of NVC. We do a lot of moving around and kind of doing the practices, less talking, more doing, is on Tuesday, November 7th at the Co-Housing Common Room from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And you can see that listed on nwcompass.org. Yeah, and then if you have other ideas or questions, feel free to email me or reach out to me through my website.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Before we go off the air, we want to say this is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And be nice to the people that come into your business and ask you to put up a poster. Just a little community awareness that we're all in this together. And this show will be rebroadcast next week. We're on a 2-week schedule. And you can also stream it